And I thought, oh my God, what is wrong? What has happened to me? I remember just saying to my mother and sister, this is just so hard. I don't want to live. I feel like my brain, someone had taken it out, smashed it against a brick wall, put it back in my head, and said, go do life.
All right, we're on it.
I wonder what you mean when you use the word I. Use the word I.
Take a break.
We have an aversion to ourselves and to what's happening inside us.
I've been very interested in this problem for a long, long time.
Something settles.
Today's guest on the show is Jacinta Dubojski. She's the creator and founder of Just Another Girl, an initiative designed to inspire and empower students by arming them with the tools to navigate difficult situations like bullying and domestic violence. She herself has experienced both of these things throughout school and then in her adult life. She's worked incredibly hard to heal her past traumas and now dedicates her entire life to this. She's a big believer in the power of storytelling, and wow, does she tell some powerful stories in our discussion. We go really deep here, and I will say that there are some trigger warnings, particularly around the domestic violence side of things, where we dive into some memories and experiences that can feel quite present for someone. If that is a traumatic memory that is very close to home, I would advise you to listen to this with a trusted person, a medical professional, or when you are in a stable headspace. The outcome, though, of going towards these harder parts is to endeavor to allow others to know truly that you are not alone. And despite the hardship and the situations that you may have or are experiencing, that there are people like Jacinta flying the flag and showing that the North Star can be emotional freedom, can be self-worth, and can be a life worth living. I hope you take as much out of this episode as I did and feel the inspiration that this warrior and soldier, Jacinta, has been able to accomplish. So without further ado, introducing Jacinta. Jacinta, can you tell me the first comment or action from your childhood that made you stop and feel like something was very wrong?
So that takes me to year seven. It's a private Christian school where I did my schooling, and I had one of my classmates say to me, Jacinta, you're freakishly tall. You know, you look like a giant, a dwarf, Bigfoot. That was something that was played over and over and over and over, but probably almost over 4 years, from years seven to year 10.
Wow.
What that does to sort of to stop, and I think when you're trying, as a teenager, trying to find yourself and learn to fit in, and your peers, and there's pressures, and you're developing, and as a woman, and you're changing, and you're growing, it just eroded my self-esteem and self-confidence and love of myself, sadly.
Yeah, I'll bet it did, especially because it's a physical attribute. And not only that, it's one that you can't control, which is not only unfair, correct, but would drive some sense of powerlessness over the ability to shift your circumstance to be that, from outcast to belonging.
I remember the guy that was giving me such a hard time, he drew on the board, I remember, one lunchtime, and drew on the whiteboard in the science lab, and the a picture of this really lanky tall girl with these really big, long, freakishly long feet, you know, because I have big feet as well. I'm tall, I'm 6'2". And I just knew that that image was of me, and I left the science lab and I ran, just sprinted downstairs, you know, two floors to the girls' toilets where the girls' rooms were, and hid in the toilets and was just crying and crying and crying. And he actually ran after me. My bully ran after me, and the teacher at the time had to get him out and just apologize. And it was just, it's traumatizing.
Do you know where that person is at today? Have you ever seen or spoken to them since?
Great question. About 6 years ago, I bumped into my bully. I was working in Albury, where I'm from, born and raised, Albury Wodonga, and he was attending a wedding. I was working at this wedding, and I saw him from a distance, and my heart rate at the time just skyrocketed, and something just from not seeing him for probably 15 years, a good 15 years after school, set eyes on him, the effect physically that it had inside my body. And I went up to him and I said, "How are you going? Can we have a chat about school?" Something in my mind and heart said, "Jacinta, I need you to speak to him. I know you're terrified. I know you're scared. I need you to speak to him. I need you to confront him. Now's your chance, your only chance." I said, "I want to talk about some things at school." He said to me, "What do you mean? You wouldn't know it. You wouldn't remember anything from school." I said to him in that moment, looking down on him, because he probably comes up to about here on me now, and I looked down on him and I said, "Actually, I remember everything." It was like a little puppy dog. It's like ears went down and tail under the bum. I said, "I'll be talking to you later." We had a break in the evening, pulled him aside privately. He says, "What do you want to talk about?" And I was sweating and my heart was going a billion miles an hour. I said, "I want to know why you were such an asshole, such a horrible, disgusting person to me in school. You killed my self-esteem. I never believed in myself. I struggled with modeling, with loving myself, with accepting myself." And I rattled off every single name-calling item that he'd ever called me. And I said, "I want to know why." And I just, it was so empowering. He said to me in that moment, he was shaking. He started getting emotional. He said, "Jacinta, I had no idea the bullying had this effect on you." He said, "I'm so sorry." I said, "Did you get off with people, putting people in so much pain?" I said, "I want to know why." I said, "You're not going anywhere until I know why." He then explained to me, which I didn't know, so he lived with his father and stepmother all through his childhood, and his stepmother gave him a horrific time at home, so wouldn't accept him, didn't ever celebrate his birthdays, and just gave him absolute hell at home. In turn, he came to school and gave everyone in his class, not just me, almost everyone in his class, absolute hell. And he was so confident, he was so cocky, so reassured. But my God, did he hide that pain from home inside him so well to deflect that everyone else isn't good enough because he's not good enough.
It's so interesting I think it's the first time maybe that I've personally ever heard someone as an adult confront their childhood bully. A lot of the time we don't get to tie a loose end in that knot, not in that loose end, sorry, I should say, and you had that opportunity. And so the next question is, by the end of that conversation, what was the emotion you were left with?
I felt lighter. I felt free. I took the power back. Jacinta, little teenage Jacinta, little vulnerable teenage child Jacinta, who's still in here, who I carry with me every day, felt empowered, felt like she had a voice.
What's your gut feel anecdotally or evidence based on how many people who were childhood bullies grow up and actually look at that and go, I fucked up? Or do they just continue to live in ignorant bliss and treat people horribly?
Yeah, that's a good question, Mitch. I think, look, I'd like to think that they change. I'd like to think that who you are as a teen or a child and then coming into your adulthood, maybe having their own children, whether partners, you know, relationships, getting married, having to do some real big life-changing events, and then maybe seeing their own children going through school and being bullied possibly. I'd like to think there's some shift there, but also he had no idea that really maybe he was a bully.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you said it takes certain life events for particular people to change their ways, like such as having children. That to me is a really concerning reality, that people change after they have children, not before. Because often the intergenerational trauma or the unhealthy behaviors will be passed down. And the wake-up call is sometimes too late once the damage is already done to their own children. And it's kind of really selfish in a way when you think people would prefer to run away from their own pain and make it someone else's problem because it's too hard to look in the mirror.
Yes. 100%. It is, but Mitch, that's healing. That's doing the work, and it's ugly, and it's painful, and it hurts. Oh my God, does it hurt?
I know for you, there were moments even after childhood where the bullying in its traditional sense might not have been the same, or it let up a bit, but you then faced new and different challenges in the form of abuse in romantic relationships. How, when that started to occur, did it bring you back to that feeling, ironically small, even though you were tall, in childhood, once the abuse started in adulthood?
I think, to be honest, Mitch, I didn't actually realize how much of a damaging effect psychologically, mentally, the bullying had on me. And not doing any work, not doing any therapy, no psychology work, no counseling, and then going into late teens and early 20s into an abusive relationship, thinking it's okay because, well, I'm entering that space knowing that I'm not enough, I'm not okay, I don't really fit in, and I really just need a guy to tell me that I'm enough and I'm lovable and I'm okay. So then when psychologically, sadly, you're reaffirmed that in a more probably aggressive state. So being a domestic violence survivor from my early 20s in a relationship for 3 years, there is the physical, going to work with bruises on my neck, with bruises all on my arms, being choked, being grabbed on the bed, strangled. The psychological abuse, the mental abuse, I feel is a thousand times worse and just eroded me even more to almost like just completely soulless, to just to nothing, the soulless, to just to nothing. But I remember, you know, I couldn't, I was trying to actually fall pregnant, not being able to do so, trying several times, not being able to do so, being called, screaming from another room, you useless fucking you can't even fall pregnant. What good are you? Tears, immediately just emotion, just like daggers in the heart. And all I could think of at the time was, I can't have a child with this person. That they say, listen to your heart, not your head. My head was saying, it's okay, you can do this. You can do this, it's okay. My heart was actually pleading and crying to me, saying, Jacinta, please don't have a child with this horrible, horrible monster.
Mm.
I remember running down to the cemetery, only probably a 5-minute jog, 6-minute jog. I ran down to the cemetery where my dear late grandmother is buried many, many years ago now. When I was 10, she passed away. And I remember sitting after massive blues, massive, massive blues, physically, mentally, massive blues. I'd actually sit at the base of her grave and just put my hand on the marble, on the base of the grave, and just say, Nana, I need you to save me from this man, please. Please, please save me from this monster. I couldn't leave. It, for people to say, well, I wouldn't be treated like that, just leave. You know, just walk out. Don't let someone treat you like that. It's, there's so many layers. There's so many layers to this, to psychological abuse, to trauma of the brain and the you know, how complex our minds are, that I just, I prayed. He had, was seeing another woman whilst we were together, and ended up kicking me out of the house. He pretty much just said, yeah, I don't love you anymore. Would you like me to drop you to your parents or your best friend's house? And that was it.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to even respond to what you just said, because there's just no words for any human enduring that type of behavior from another human being. It's deplorable, doesn't even come close. And you said something very important there, which is, so many people ask, why doesn't she leave? And I recently learned the expression, we need to replace this with, why doesn't he stop? And in those moments, from the study I've done on family and domestic violence, what people don't realize is the cycle of control and manipulation that a perpetrator has on the victim, if that's okay for me to use that term, victim, in this yes, context of the experiencer of that abuse. And that the mind games plus the physical fear plus then all the other domains of control that can straddle around that, whether that be financial blackmail, whether that be through psychological belittling to the point where you don't have the self-worth to feel like you deserve better. It could be holding pets for ransom. It could be blockading you from outside connection. It could be physical entrapment. There's so many parts of it. And even if it's not experienced to the extreme, control and manipulation can weed its way through the vines of our personality and our thought that we can actually be and have something different. And I'm sure that that was the case for you.
100%, Mitch, you've no, you know, every nail on the head there of there's just, oh, there's so many factors and different channels and different avenues of of control and narcissism. So I was, what was one thing that was very much, you will be nothing. Sorry, you are nothing without me. Do you hear me? Do you understand me? You are nothing without me. You will never accomplish anything without me. Do you hear me? And it just, Mitch, it's so heartbreaking that I think back and I can even remember exactly where I was in the home where that conversation was happening 12, 13 years ago. And I wholeheartedly believed him and said, yes.
Wow.
I understand that I am nothing without you. I wholeheartedly 1000% believed him.
For it to get to that point, it means that it has sunk in beyond a thought. It is now a whole body schema belief. And after that relationship ended, I don't know the timeline, so excuse me if I'm getting the details wrong, but I think that's when you ended up in an inpatient unit in hospital shortly after that. Is that right?
Yes. Probably maybe year and a half later. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And what was the trigger? What was happening for you to know or for others to know that hospital needed to happen?
So I had actually moved to city, did a lot of counselling, a lot of psychology work on myself, and I'd actually moved to Sydney for a short time and did some modelling. My agent at the time, unfortunately, was quite a controlling gentleman that and had sadly brought up a lot of past trauma and past beliefs that maybe were underlying from especially that relationship we just discussed. I'd found my anxiety was just sort of skyrocketing again, just just tightness of the chest and just so much fear playing out. I then said goodbye to that world. I'd moved back to Albury. What I didn't actually realise much at the time was having a mental breakdown. So the front lobal prefrontal cortex of the mind completely went to sleep. One of the scariest things I've ever experienced to date. Absolutely petrifying.
What happened?
I just remember every morning just waking up with so much panic. So just I'd go to sleep. I'd sleep pretty good through the night, wake up quite early, and just this fear, this panic, just like the saber-toothed tiger is coming to bite your face off, but there's no tiger. And just as time went on, that fear just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And I found myself mentally not being able to concentrate, not being able to really hold conversations, finding work quite overwhelming, hard to actually even do a day-to-day work. I then remember waking up going, I'd had a shower one morning, got to my clothes, I got a beautiful wardrobe, loving clothes, loving fashion, and I went to my cupboard and I couldn't actually getting dressed, putting myself, styling myself just in an outfit, everyday outfit, was like climbing Everest with no oxygen tank, with no poles, with no gear, with no clothes, with no. And I thought, oh my God, what is wrong? What has happened to me? I remember just saying to my mother and sister, this is just so hard. I just don't, I don't want to live. I feel like my brain, someone had taken it out, smashed it against a brick wall, put it back in my head and said, go do life. Go do your everyday, day-to-day life. My mother and sister then were just like, Jacinta needs more help. We can't continue with just this cycle of just being so mentally unwell, just saying, I don't want to be here. This is all too hard. I went to the public hospital in Albury, psychiatric hospital. Went to sleep that night. I remember waking up in the morning and there was just this banging on my door, and I was on sleeping tablets and all sorts of things, all stressed, bang, bang, bang. And the nurse had sort of reefed open the door and said, get up. It's time to get up. Everyone's out there eating. Get up. I didn't think life could actually get any worse in that moment, being in an isolated in a room in a psychiatric ward. My brain was fried, was completely offline, wasn't working. And this mental health nurse is yelling at me. I was in there for a week. I remember one of the male nurses saying to me, oh, Jacinta, do you, what do you have goals in life or this sort of thing? We were doing some writing and things like that. And I said, yes, I'd actually love to share my story one day. I actually would like to go and speak to teens and speak and sort of about abuse and bullying and the effects and this sort of thing. He said to me, you can't actually put a sentence together, let alone getting up on stage and presenting to people. How are you going to do that? To date, I think I've spoken to almost 3,000 teenagers about my story. These are the people in our public health system that are meant to be healing, restoring, repairing, feeling safe. What has happened to the world?
So everyone listening to this right now is going to be going, how the fuck did you come back from that? How did you come back from childhood bullying through a domestic violence relationship to a horrible experience at your most vulnerable time when you're at rock bottom thinking it can't get any worse? You gotta be ready to give up at that point. So was there a particular moment or someone that flipped this and turned this around, or was it a slow, gradual process of rebuilding?
I think, Mitch, it's a slow rebuilding of just, you know, it's listening to, you know, incredible stories like yourself, other just wonderful people that have been through so much hardship, so much pain, so much trauma, and they just come out the other side and it's just this, Jacinta, you're going to be okay. Just keep going. Just please don't give up. And it's hard. And it's still, I still very much, you know, I meditate every day. So my mental health is still very much something that I need to check in on every day. It's a process of some days it's great, some days it's pretty ordinary. And I know that the self-care needs to ramp up, the exercise and meditation and mindfulness and connecting with people. But it's trying to remember how far I've come. Forgiveness, that's a massive one. Forgiving myself for putting myself into, sadly, it wasn't just one abusive relationship, it was several in different ways, shapes and forms, and going, the world hasn't, you know, Jacinta's got more of the world that I need to give. I need to do some powerful work here and I need to keep going.
What would you say to someone listening to this who's relating to your story in some way, particularly the aspect of not feeling like you have self-worth or any type of internal system that you can lean on? And they're at rock bottom. It might look different to what your rock bottom looked like, but what's the number one piece of advice you would give to that human?
You're not alone. Even though you feel alone and you're the only one going through what you're going through, there's so many that have experienced something very similar to what you're going through. Please find the courage to seek help through a professional psychologist, counselor, whatever it may be. Please, you don't have to feel this way forever, and this will pass. It doesn't feel like it in that moment. It feels like this is my forever. I'm going to feel like this is forever. I feel so shit. My whole world's completely fallen around me. I have nothing, but you can get better. The brain can heal. Our brains are these incredible, incredible organs that, yes, they can work against us very much, but every day they're actually trying to heal and restore you and get you into a better space. It's like it's nature. It's our body's incredible way of healing. It just takes time and patience.
You use the word nothing a few times. Who or what was the thing that helped you start to believe that you were something?
That's something, Mitch, that resides, I think, within yourself. So from clinical psychology, from counseling, from books, from podcasts, from all these certain different things. It's being able to, I think, even just standing in the mirror, doing some self-love, just standing in the mirror and just saying, I love you. I accept you just as you are. I'd be going for runs of a morning, for example, and just having sort of affirmations just playing in my ears, just on repeat, over and over, over and over, over and over. And very, very slowly, these neural pathways in the brain actually kind of start to form, going, actually, I am enough. And I always was enough. I've just sadly been told for so long that I wasn't. And I sadly believed all those negative, horrible thoughts that have sort of, you know, that was cemented in my, you know, in my mind for so long. So it's gradual, but it does have to come from in here through myself, through many different avenues, I feel, to finally really believe and go, yeah, wow, I'm amazing. Making sure we don't have any other external factors that are telling us that we're not good enough. So we want to make sure that you're doing the really good work. Who am I surrounding myself with? My loved ones, my friends, do they actually love me? Are they supporting me? Are they backing me? Are they respectful? Are they kind? Are they reaffirming all these beautiful, wonderful things and all this hard work I'm doing in therapy and actually adding to all the beauty and good work that I'm doing in here, if that makes sense?
Does the narrative of I'm nothing or a lack of self-worth still play out with you today as an adult?
Yes, it does. Only from when, at times when I'm triggered, when something triggers me quite severely from the past, And that nasty bit of old fear and anxiety comes up and says, hey, remember me? Remember that really yuckiness from many, many years ago? And that's when I've got to get out my tool belt in the tool belt and go, okay, time to ramp up these tools and let's lift that work. Do I need to connect in with the psychologist again? Do I need to make sure that exercise, that gratitude, that mindfulness, that meditation, very, very important. So it's not just, oh, okay, I went through that 10 years ago. Now I'm perfect and life's not going to throw any kind of yuckiness my way. Oh, it does. Life likes to do this to us, as I'm sure you've probably experienced in your own.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think's the most helpful thing a psychologist has ever said to you in the last decade or so?
Oh, that's a good one. I'm not broken and I don't need fixing.
You might have felt that, but your psychologist was helping you realize that you're not smashed and broken. You are someone that has an internal worth in and of yourself, and you just need to pour some fertilizer and some gasoline on the good part, not the bad part.
Yes. I think also, if I can add to that, realizing that I used to think that trauma was and not taking away from, was a car crash and someone losing a leg, losing a life. I thought that was trauma. Yes, a period. Then, actually going deeper into the work, I went, wow, actually, I've been through shit tons of trauma. That's why I feel this way. And my brain's actually just responding and doing a human natural thing in just trying to get its way through life.
Yeah.
It's a response to trauma. So trauma actually, yeah, it's there's a lot there. And almost probably everyone on the planet, in a way, has possibly experienced some sense, some level of trauma.
Agree. Yeah, I think we have, and some more than others. And I think there's ways to respond. And I'm so glad that through all the interventions, all the hard work, discipline, belief, resilience, luck, blessings, and everything else, you've been able to come through your experiences, and now you make meaning from your pain in order to help others not go through what you went through. So on that note, what do you think is your main message? Like, what would you put on as a billboard on the highway?
If you're struggling, please, please reach out, please seek help, because there's help available, and you don't need to live this isn't how you need to do life. You know, that this feeling or this pain that you're feeling isn't everything. And the world has so much more, you know, you have so much more to give and do and be in the world. So please have that courage and speak up and reach out and get that help. It's
and
so important.
What happens if someone's reached out for help before and it hasn't worked well? What would you say to them?
Find someone else.
Keep
going. I went through, I was living on the South Coast for a short time, for a couple of years, and I remember going through 4 clinical psychologists, maybe 5. I saw 1 clinical psychologist. I gave a bit of a download, a brief of what I've of what I've been through, how I'm feeling, what's happening for me. She said, Jacinta, I actually can't help you. You're too complex for me. I actually can't help you. I don't know what to do with you. Then I went, okay, well, I'm going to go and try and find someone that maybe thinks I'm not as broken, or someone that actually can heal me. There has to be someone out here in this medical world that can actually help me, that can do some good for me. And I did, and I did some great work with a clinical psychologist, but it took 4, maybe 5.
Mm-hmm.
So if one doesn't work, get rid of them. Keep going. Next. Doesn't work, get rid of them. Next. There's someone for you, I assure you.
Amen. Where can we find more about you, Jacinta?
Yes. So through justanothergirlproject.com.au is my website. So you can book me for a chat or a presentation, or you will see me on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube, Just Another Girl Project, Jacinta Dabosky.
Perfect. And who's the best type of person that should reach out to you if they're experiencing what type of issues?
Any school, any teenager or woman, man that has maybe it's workplace bullying, maybe it's self-esteem, so I can not only go into school halls and things and classrooms, I can also present in more of a corporate environment as well. So I'm happy, and if I can't help, I can move it on to someone else I feel that may be more suited to them. So
perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Jacinta. It's been a honor to hear your story, and inspiring to be exposed to the resilience that you've had throughout all these difficult times.
Thank you. Likewise, Mitch, I put you on a pedestal and keep doing the amazing work. Thank you for being you.
The pedestal is definitely not needed. I'm the one looking up to your strength. So, it's an honor to have you here.
I wholeheartedly appreciate it and take that on. That's another one. When we get compliments, really feel them and take them in. You know, it's a blessing, it's a gift. We don't always get them. It can be hard to give them to ourselves, but really, really take that in, because it's so good.
Damn straight.
Emotions have a natural tendency to dissipate unless they get reinforced. And so if there's more thoughts, more stories, more intentions come along. So the act of how am I leaving it alone is an act of not adding more stories, adding fuel to it. So it might not go away in 2 minutes, but then it begins to relax and dissipate. And so rather than being the person who has to fix it, we become the person who makes space for the heart, the mind, to relax and settle away itself.